Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Sophia Brussels Washington, from serfdom to freedom to self-accomplishment, Finding the American Dream is a memoir of Michael Gluckoff's remarkable life from his war-torn youth to his thriving adulthood. Michael was born in June 1944 during the heaviest bombing of Sofia by the U.S. Air Corps. His parents were forced to divorce because his father was an officer in the pre-communist Royal Army. Michael graduated in 1963, was conscripted in the Bulgarian Army for 2 years. To avoid membership in the Communist Party, he declined to go to reserve officers' school and went instead as a private in the mechanized infantry. Eventually, he escaped to Belgium, followed by his mother and little sister. He earned a degree in political science while he drove a taxicab, and in the 1980s became an international radio broadcaster with the Bulgarian Service of the Voice of America. Michael joined the U.S. Navy Reserve in 1987 at the age of 43, serving all over the world due to his unique, multifaceted background. Michael Gluckoff, author of Sophia Brussels Washington, From Serfdom to Freedom to Self-Accomplishment, Finding the American Dream, and he's our guest on This Week in America. Michael, a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rick.
What an amazing story. The book is fascinating reading. I will give you information on Michael's website, and we'll have that on the video screen, and we'll have that on our website for you as well. Sophia Brussels Washington, From Serfdom to Freedom to Self-Accomplishment. Michael, let's start with why you decided to write this book. What a remarkable story you tell. And you do it so well, we feel like we're there with you as you are going through these experiences. What prompted you to write this book?
Usually I'm too busy to write more than what's related to my work. But a lot of friends told me, don't waste your story. People need to understand what you went through. And I thought, what the heck? I believe that I can share my story and people can learn through it, because I lived in three different worlds. And it's good to be able to compare, but you cannot compare unless you lived in. Of course, the first one where I'm born is the Soviet communism, which was pathetic. It was the Cold War. It was the misery, very difficult military service with a lot of hazing. And I survived that and decided that I'm going to escape and live in freedom, have my education, and ultimately the time came to describe my experience after the escape, which, don't forget, escaping from a communist country is not just picking up a passport and leave. You have to risk your life and bet on it and on the unknown which will follow. Not everybody is ready to do that, but I did it. I succeeded. I managed to beat the bureaucracy of the communist system. And I lived for 13 years in Belgium. I drove taxi cab for 12. And I used my time to go to college. It was very hard, but interesting and rewarding. And then I continued my education. I applied for an internship in the Council of Europe in Strasbourg, France. I was admitted ultimately. It was not so easy. And then I continued my education in the College of Europe in Bruges, Belgium, on postgraduate level. Which gave me possibility to advance. However, I could not find a job that I was looking for, which was my dream was to be related to foreign policy, intelligence. This is what's related to the knowledge in my background.
Yes.
But at the end, I applied for Voice of America in the United States, and I was accepted. And I had a wife who was American, and since I noticed that there are too many age limits in Belgium, beautiful country, great life, but when it comes to work and the background of work, it's socialized medicine, it's age limits is something unknown in the United States. Age limits in the United States are only in the military. You cannot be an officer after the age of 60. And in the Foreign Service, you cannot be a diplomat after the age of 65. That's it. That's not the case in Europe. So I left, and I was so grateful for what I got.
Yes.
I always wanted to serve in NATO uniform. This is, and I insist on that point, the United States is practically the only country in the world ready to go to fight for the freedom of other countries and other peoples. And I believe that starting from that point, it would be honor for anybody around the world to wear the American uniform. So that became an extension of my American dream. And it was not easy. The details are in the book, but I made it again. I went under the wire, practically joined the Navy 1 week before my 43rd birthday, and served with pleasure for 20 years. I started as a journalist in a submarine, anti-submarine patrol squadron, and ended as intelligence specialist and analyst with agencies like Defense Intelligence Agency and Office of Naval Intelligence, and supporting other forces like the Air Force, Army, on the occasion. And I wanted even to serve after the age of 63, but I was not allowed to that point. So I wanted to share this experience because it's worth. Young Americans need to see and understand that their country is still the country with unlimited possibilities. What you can achieve here, especially if you're born here, but even if you're not, the system is not going to stop you if you work hard enough and you desire to succeed, like I did, and I succeeded. And if I succeeded, anybody else can.
When you see all of the obstacles that you went through, and it's such a remarkable career, all phases, we could spend an hour talking about. It is so fascinating. And you're there with Michael. He takes us through, and we're able to feel what he was feeling going through all of these different situations through his life. The title pretty well sums it up. Sophia Russell's Washington, From Serfdom to Freedom to Self-Accomplishment, Finding the American Dream. And Michael's website is the title of the book, sophia-russells-washington.com. We've got this on our website. You can go there, get information, order the book as well. Book available at Amazon, wherever books are sold. Michael Glukhoff, and his last name is spelled Glukhov, as in Victor. All this, of course, on our website. Let's talk about some of what you went through while you were describing the problems of the totalitarian system in your country. In the United States and Western Europe, there were raging anti-capitalist protests culminating with the the May 68 events in France. How do you explain that? How do you put that in perspective for us?
This is kind of paradoxical because in May 68, the events started in the University of Nanterre. Actually, in the same university, I obtained a doctorate in 1994. Those students were rich. They were ideologically anti-capitalists, and like their American colleagues a little bit earlier, already in the early 60s, they were, most of them were the followers of the school of Herbert Marcuse. Herbert Marcuse School of Sociology, of Frankfurt School, were a group of intellectual Jewish professors that wanted to modify society. They moved to Columbia University, and their influence was very strong. It coincided with the Vietnam War and the peace movement. The peace movement, don't forget, is not a spontaneous movement. It was manipulated by the Foreign Department of the Central Committee of the Soviet Communist Party. And it was an extended network of churches, peace organizations, and most of the time, or practically, I don't know if there are exceptions, they didn't know who were behind. But the movement was well organized, and it had an impact. In France, it was purely anti-capitalist and spread around Europe with a lot of destruction in Paris, to such extent that General de Gaulle was consulting the French troops occupying Germany in Baden-Baden to come and intervene on Paris to stop the chaos. Ultimately, the situation settled down. But in Germany, the Baader-Meinhof gang decided to attack American forces, and they wanted to start with arson of some military depots. And then it turned to Marxist-Leninist terrorism with political assassinations. The whole movement was maintained by the Soviet bloc. A lot of people don't know about that, especially in the United States. And only after the fall of the Berlin Wall, suddenly the movement stopped. And disappeared completely with the failure of the Soviet Union. But in 1968, there was something else in Europe. The Warsaw Pact country, six countries, attacked Czechoslovakia because at the same time, the Czechoslovak Communist Party leadership decided to give humane face to communism, to make the system acceptable for ordinary people and to suppress the terror. That was not acceptable for the Soviet Union, of course. And six armies of the Warsaw Pact, including the Bulgarian army and the unit where I used to serve in, that was special unit brigade for intervention for the Warsaw Pact. So Bulgaria, East Germany, Poland, and Romania refused to participate. So they attacked at the same time Czechoslovakia occupied. That was August 21st, 1968. And This is the time when I managed to escape from Bulgaria.
There is so much history in the book, as you can tell. Sophia Brussels Washington, from serfdom to freedom to self-accomplishment, finding the American dream. Michael Glukhoff, our guest and the author. That's Glukhov. Links on our website. His website is sophia-brussels-washington.com. And book available at Amazon, of course, and Barnes & Noble. You described the horrors you lived through during the Communist Army service part of your life. But in the U.S. military, there's harsh training, fighting wars like Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq. Some would say those were similar circumstances. What do you see as the difference?
Actually, there is a major difference. There is no conscription in the United States. The service is voluntary. As for the training is hard. It depends what kind of military branch you are. The training provided is enough to be able to sustain physically and psychologically a war situation. But it's not a training that is hazing, which is to break your personality, to destroy your feeling of privacy, to make you slave of the state. That's not the case in the US military and has never been. But that's the case of the Communist Army. The Communist Army, especially when you put the uniform, you understand. For example, I served in the Bulgarian People's Army. It's all semantic, has nothing to do with the people. Actually, the army served to suppress the people, like it was in Czechoslovakia. And it serves the expansion of the world communism, like the anthem of the Warsaw Pact was stating. That the role of the pact was extending from the Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia at that time, to Great China. So don't forget that, and there was an evolution during the time. I'm going to extend a little bit this philosophy. The totalitarian system nowadays is not so clear cut. It used to be initially pure Stalinist system that had to be accepted by all communist parties in the world. And then China, Mao opposed Stalin to that point because Chinese communism had its own way and it was zigzagging, it was not straight as it was expected from Stalin, and it was not blindly submitted to the Soviet Union. So nowadays it looks like China is a capitalist country, but it's not. It's a state capitalism. All the so-called private enterprises are not private. They're controlled by the Communist Party and work in the interest of the Communist Party. And China is a big Orwellian state where there is no privacy. There is the so-called social credit. Everybody is being observed and followed from birth to death with the aspects of what's your attitude towards the Communist Party and the People's Army. You've got to work entirely at the service of the Communist Party. Although, in appearance, yeah, they don't live in the deep misery which was in the 50s and the 60s. But still, it's a totalitarian state with no freedom. And a lot of Chinese, like at the average of 50 or 60,000 every year, try to move to the United States. Now, the Soviet Union is no more, but Russia, although not being governed by a communist party. It's the Putin's regime is a type of fascist regime, but it kept the external signs of the old communist system, like, for example, the red stars. The anthem is exactly the same as a melody, like the Soviet anthem, with just the lyrics were changed. But this system was projected also to Iran. Iran, you'd say, is an extreme Islamist state. It is. However, during the Islamic Revolution, when the Shah was brought down, one of the branches of the Palestinian Liberation Movement, the FPLP, which was the Marxist-Leninist branch, got in touch with the Iranian students, revolutionaries, and taught them the fundamentals of Marxism and Marx-Leninist rule. Those fundamentals are, and that's the invention of Lenin. He became a professional revolutionary, and his system was working to perfection. First, grab the power. Second, hold the power forever. Don't leave the chance of anybody to take the power back from you. And the third one is spread the power and expand. So this is the common point of all totalitarian states today. Of course, I almost forgot North Korea.
No,
North
yes.
Korea is like a pure Stalinist state coming like from a museum, because it is really the Stalinist state from the old time. But you can see that in the propaganda periodically. I'm not going into the details. But I believe I managed to project the common points that are a logical explanation for whoever needs or wants to know.
Well, so well done, and a unique perspective. That's why I've been looking forward so much to having Michael with us on the program. All that he's lived when he's talking about the difference in governing styles, he's been there. He's experienced all of them. A few minutes left in the program. I want to squeeze in a couple more questions because there's so much to talk about. Our guest is Michael Glukhov, Glukhov. The book is Sophia Brussels Washington, From Serfdom to Freedom to Self-Accomplishment, Finding the American Dream. His website, sophia-brussels-washington.com. All that on our website. Michael, there are today some individuals across Eastern Europe you read about pretending that the old system there was better than the present economic instability, they call it, in the EU sphere, crime on the streets, a situation they say was better in the old days. What's your comment? What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's the funny part, because there are some people my age who used to live under communism. But let's be honest. Even at that time, you're still young, you're in your 20s, you're burst with energy. Even if the regime was so bad, even if the stores were empty, even if you've been hazed during the army service, you become actually a slave of the party state. But you're still young, there are girls around, there are love stories, trying to impress them, using the little possibilities of your life to have a romance. Everybody was playing Western music, dancing rock and roll twist. That was kind of entertaining, and it gave some hope in the future. Actually, there was no hope for as long as the system is there. But when you think the little salaries you receive, the people are working for $1 or $2 a day. Yes, the bread was very cheap. It's like 5 cents or 10 cents a loaf. If you compare the prices at that time with the prices today, you'll be horrified because of the inflation. But again, those people forgot that they're not old anymore. They're not young anymore. Not only that, they don't have marketable skills. A lot of them, because of the system, when the system transferred to freedom and capitalism, and it was a little bit wild capitalism with corruption, suddenly a wave of crime. Yes, they said at that time, and I agree, you can play at the middle of the street at 12 o'clock midnight and everything was calm. There were no cars, no trucks. You can walk around the city, nobody is going to stop you. Why? Because it was a police state. No freedom, no weapons.
Yes.
That doesn't exist anymore, and this is the price of freedom. However, the freedom was not very well interpreted. I heard about assassins that after being caught, they said, well, we're free now, we can do anything we want. Yes, it takes time to learn democracy. Other people who pretend that it was good were the people who used to have the privileges. If they were party members or their families were related to the Communist Party, you have everything. Free education, strong currency, you can have a passport, travel in the West, have special stores with special low prices, with products that you never see anywhere else in around the country. Yes, it was a beautiful life for them. And of course, with the system, the privileges were gone too. So that's another category that definitely regret the old regime, but that's how it is. And then there is another category, which I would say it's a product of disinformation, product of some old feeling of love for Russia, but Russia from 19th century. I describe those historical moments in my book. I don't want to take the time now. And that has been used and abused by the Soviet, by the Russian embassy, spreading massively disinformation. Actually, there are a couple of parties, political parties, that are so much pro-Russian that they are agitating for whoever would like to follow. Remember, it's a free country now. To pull Bulgaria out of NATO and out of the European Union, which would be an instant disaster. So those are the people who regret the old system.
Yes.
But if you think a little, you can understand why.
So much more in Michael's book, Sophia Brussels, Washington. I'll give you the information as we conclude here shortly, but I want to get one more question in here. So many interesting aspects to your life in Belgium and Europe. You found academic success there, recognition there. You were well established. You decided to move to the United States. Why did you decide to leave all that behind, a good life, and move to the U.S.?
That's a good question. I believe I started answering to a point. First, you need to be propped up. You need a lot of connections to find a good job, especially political job. Then I mean related to defense, foreign policy. This is where my qualifications are. And I'm a foreigner. Yeah, I've been naturalized Belgian. I still have a Belgian citizenship. Actually, I have three citizenships. And look, although I have three citizenships, I've been probably the only one, I don't know, and in the U.S. Armed Forces that did obtain top secret SCI clearance. I've been trusted enough, but that tells you a long way about this country, that once you're checked, the kind of confidence this the government can have a new and the United States Armed Forces are have in your young people like the sergeant staff. They have all top secret clearance. They do important jobs. They're trusted and they do their job well, with small exceptions. I describe some of them in my book, and they're a well-known historical example. So that's one, the connections. Second, the age limits. And the age limits are related to the system. The European Union is a beautiful place, but the system is slightly socialist. It's not pure socialism, it's a kind of classic socialism of the type of Edward Bernstein. It's an old theory that says in time socialism will evolve and become even communism, but with freedom and opulence for all. Of course, that never happened. So there is a kind of mild socialism, but this mild socialism has an impact. First, high unemployment. In order to provide employment, you have to drop the age limits. Like in France, they don't want to work after the age of 62. How about that? That's one of the reasons I came here. I want to work. Actually, I'm 80 and I'm still working full-time job because I can do it and the system is not stopping me.
Yes.
A lot of people don't pay attention to that, but that's the case. In Europe, no, it's mandatory. That means, especially in those political assignments, this is not only you need to be propped up, but the age matters a lot because they need to ensure some rotation and rotation of elites. As the president Mitterrand said one day, he was socialist, the president of France, we need a rotation of elites, people from elite schools, and very few other people can reach those places. Now, there was kind of possible exception for me. After I finished my PhD in France, which was related to counter-terrorism, at the moment when terrorism was blooming around the world, when I graduated, I applied for the Belgian Ministry of Internal Affairs, and I've been told initially that no, there is no space. I cannot go this job. But at the end, when I graduated, they told me, now you can have the job. I said, it's too little too late because I have work in the United States.
Yeah. It's such a remarkable story, and it continues. We've only touched the surface of what Michael has in his book, Sophia Brussels, Washington, From Serfdom to Freedom to Self-Accomplishment, Finding the American Dream. Our guest has been Michael Glukhov. That's Glukhov. His book available wherever books are sold, send it to Amazon, Barnes & Noble. His website, information on Michael, his book, and you can order there, sophia-brussels-washington.com. Links, of course, for all this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. I'd like to thank King Pages Press, the author's marketing consultant, for arranging our conversation today. King Pages Press, results-oriented, making sure your work gets the attention it deserves. Michael, it's been a pleasure. Time has gone by way too quickly. Hopefully we can continue this discussion. Such a unique perspective that you have. And so many years of knowledge. It's like a history book coming alive as we're talking about it. You'll feel that same way as you're reading the book. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Rick, so much. It was a pleasure talking to you and had the honor to have your public.
Well, it's so nice to have you here, and hopefully we can continue. The book is Sophia Russell's Washington, From Serfdom to Freedom to Self-Accomplishment, Finding the American Dream. All the information, of course, on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We are back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.